Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we've talked about this before, haven't we? Jimmy's thinking songs.
I don't think we have, or I don't remember at least.
So... for example, just there, I just said da da da,
right?
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which is Peter Pan.
Yes, that I know.
So I have, I don't know, I just, and I feel like everyone must do this, like little songs that come out whilst you're doing something.
You might
know, because I've got a few. Like,
yeah.
I'll have like the entertainer. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Are they?
I'll have that. Or
are the songs themed to different tasks?
No, maybe like in some, if someone did some study, potentially.
Of you.
But no, you know, the other ones like Ride of the Valkyrie, that'll come out. Indiana Jones theme.
Interesting. Quite an array of songs too.
They are, but... They just pop up. So I thought that was something everyone had. There you
I
go.
Mean, maybe. I don't.
Okay. I bet you do. What do you do? Like, so you're doing something and you want to fill that, you know, intensely awkward space
right.
of silence whilst you're actually just physically doing something that isn't awkward at all. But do you not have like a...
No, I don't. I'll listen to music, like real music, not music that.
But
like,
it's not that. It's just like a little like, oh, I'm doing a 2 second task, and then those 2 seconds, it's like hold music, in real life.
No, I mean maybe I'm the odd one out. I'm sure everyone will let us know. But
I want people to let us know what is your hold music.
What is your hold music? It's like what is your damage? What is your hold music?
What's your Yes. That's what Heather's missing. Maybe that's some Mean Girls.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with sodas and serenades.
I couldn't remember. I think we've had both of them for different things, but stuff it. Yay.
We're going to...
So,
uh-huh.
Uh-huh. No, wait. No, that sounded interesting. What are we going
to
do?
We're going to have to repeat them all eventually because, you know, we're going to turn into old men doing this podcast.
There's only so... Well, exactly. And there's only so many
right.
fruits.
Yeah, like... Fruits? There's only so many fruits. That's my...
Maybe that's what we can move on to.
That sounds like a lust-based dating app for gay men.
Too many fruits. Oh, God. I've been there. So, hey, speaking of fruits, what are you drinking? That looks tasty, actually, today. What is that?
It's very yummy. It's called a backwards cocktail. It tastes different whether you drink it from the top or from the bottom. It's one of those layered dealies. It's really clever.
I love it.
Did you like that?
That was great. That was
really,
really good.
That was yes-anding to its extreme.
That was fantastic. Well, I got mine. I don't know what it is. It tastes kind of like... kind of bitter.
Yeah.
It's I got it from a Borders in Kentucky, but
are you sure you didn't get it from a Target in Kentucky, or did that depend on which year you're drinking it?
It would indeed. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just really out of date. Oh, topical. So oh goodness, what does that mean?
What could we possibly be talking about? You have a quiz question for us, don't you, Jim?
I do indeed. Okay, so this musical is perhaps one of the only musicals with key lyrical changes driven by a post-divorce legal agreement.
Dun dun dun. What could
what
it be?
Could it possibly be?
It's Cats! It's not Cats.
It is Cats. I wonder, maybe.
No, what is it? What is it?
It is the last 5 years.
Don't kiss me goodbye again. Leave this night clean and quiet. You want the last word. You want me to laugh, but leave it for now. All you can say, all you can feel, was wrapped up inside that one perfect kiss. Leave it at that. I'll watch you turn the corner.
Bling, 2001.
2001. Screaming out. It was a simpler time.
All those tweens. Wait, this was our.
We were tweens. We were tweens. Yeah, this was kind of our Be More Chill before Tumblr let us get really excited about it, don't you think?
Exactly. Absolutely. This was 100%. This was like.
Yeah, this was.
It speaks to me.
It was popular with musical theater nerds before, like, we were musical theater nerds in public.
Exactly. I would totally give you that.
Right?
I would totally give you that.
Yeah. Like, if you knew what the last 5 years was, you could nerd out with the theater nerds across town by having
Absolutely.
A mutual love.
Yep. Yep. You just mentioned, like, do you know, have you heard about this snake called Wayne? And see what the reaction is. And then suddenly you'd be like, ah, hey. Hey. So, last 5 years, mm-hmm. music, book, and lyrics. By Mr. Jason Robert Brown.
Mm-hmm. Premiered out of town in Chicago in 2001. Technically just outside of Chicago in a town called Skokie.
Yes, Skokie. Great name, though.
Which I think might, and maybe we'll talk about this later, I don't know, but may have contributed to why I think this was especially popular in my little neck of the woods. Because
When you say your hood, how hood-like for you is that? You're not from Skokie.
I'm not from Skokie, but I had high school friends who saw the premiere of the last 5 years.
Cool.
Just as like a night on the town. Not because it was something great, not because it was something that seemed like it was going to be fantastic, but just because it was the show in town.
Excellent. Cool.
Yeah. So, and then it made it off Broadway in 2002.
Eventually.
Didn't play for too long, just a couple months, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think it was in kind of the post 9/11 fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Where things weren't really lasting.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Because nobody was going downtown. So, exactly. You know what I mean? It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of suffered from that. And also it was off Broadway.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it kind of exploded out. Had mm-hmm. a slew of international productions. Japan, Korea, Poland. I don't know why I picked those three in particular.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And also it's not Korea. I don't know why I said Korea. Or mm-hmm. Japan. I'm just going to say that again. I don't know why. That's so strange. Poland, Ireland, Melbourne, Barcelona. Mm. Barcelona has had a revival.
Mm, Barcelona's done it
right?
twice. Yeah.
That's weird. Barcelona? Like,
yeah. Where are you going? Last 5 years revival in Barcelona. Oh.
Absolutely. And, of course, it had its West End opening, like actual on West End, mm-hmm. In 2016 at the St. James
I'm
Theater.
Surprised it took that long.
But to get on West End?
Still, this show is...
But it's never been on Broadway.
I guess that's true.
Do you know?
Yeah.
That I find that quite interesting, that it even went there, because it's a two-hander.
Yeah, because you know? It's so tiny.
It's teensy.
Yeah.
But hey, and then, of course... In 2014, we had the movie with Jeremy Jordan and Anna Kendrick.
Which I just watched for the first time.
Is that you just watching it now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah.
It was fascinating.
I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts. Yeah. I'm very intrigued to hear your thoughts. You're getting the live reactions. It's basically a YouTube react.
YouTube.
Fight Brothers.
Musical theater nerds react to musicals.
By the way, why isn't that a thing? Fine Brothers, are you listening?
Call us up. We look good on camera, too.
We really do. We got experience. But I feel like that should be one of the things that they jump on.
Yeah.
Think about how big musical theater is on YouTube.
I mean, yes. Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's an undercapitalized market. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they love money.
Capitalizing on undercapitalized markets.
Absolutely. That's what we like. So, yeah. So, Tommy.
Yes.
What is the last 5 years? I don't think anyone will have heard of it.
No one. No one. Boy meets girl. Girls going backwards in time.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like the Doctor Who musical.
Right, exactly.
That's pretty much what it is.
No. Last 5 years is, I mean, pretty standard love story fare at its core, I think. It's just a really quaint love story. But the catch is in the structure. And the guy's story is traveling forward in time, while the girl's story is traveling backwards in time, either from first meeting through to marriage, through to divorce, or the other way around. Divorce, backwards to marriage, backwards to first meeting.
Yes. Without any sort of explicit explanation as well. You don't see, you work that out for yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's,
there's no lame style. It's 18, whatever.
Right.
You're in whatever.
Yeah. No, you have to figure it out. And it's structured so that you can slowly figure it out as it goes.
Totally.
And it is what makes this story interesting and successful. Without this structure, the story is boring. Because love stories, generally speaking, are kind of boring without something interesting added on top of them. I think. But it's very specifically structured that the time the two stories cross is on their wedding day.
Yes.
And in the original staging, they had two wonderful turntables and they would slowly cross each other in different directions. So perfect and simple.
There you go. Nice and easy. That's the thing. It is actually, at heart, very simple. I think, should we just delve straight in?
Let's do it.
Flying.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Keep up with us. Let's talk about structure.
Let's do it.
I'm breaking my mother's heart. The JCC of Spring Valley is shaking and crumbling to the ground. And my grandfather's rolling in his grave. If you had a tattoo, that wouldn't matter. If you had a shaved head, that'd be cool. If you came from Spain or Japan or the back of the van, just as long as you're not from Hebrew school. I say, now I'm getting somewhere. I'm finally breaking through. I say, hey, hey, Shiksa goddess, I've been waiting for someone like you.
So yeah, I think that's one of the really kind of key and beautiful things about the show is it is so simple.
Right.
It's not doing anything that's complicated.
No.
They're not trying to do any sort of Chekhov's gun style things really that much either.
No.
It's just it's one story told in two different directions, two different perspectives.
To the point of being kind of stereotypical, at least in content. I don't think it's a caricature. Ooh. It's not terribly exaggerated, but like, you know, they fall in and out of love. It really approaches, I think, a lot of the simple love story stereotypes. The minute you get married, every other woman in the world finds you attractive. The guy cheats on the girl. No one needs to know. Like this is simple bread and butter stuff, but told in a beautiful way, which is a thing that Jason Robert Brown does very well.
He does indeed. In fact, shall we jump on that just now? Let's just jump on that just now.
Sure.
So like you're saying about the kind of simple bread and butter, I think if we're looking at the musical theater oeuvre and our kind of timeline, as we've kind of already said, with Songs for a New World, when this kind of started to happen, I feel like this is Jason Robert Brown kind of cashing in on the thing that he started.
Yes.
It is almost a kind of song cycly vibe here, where they're using these simple relatable situations to extend into metaphor, which actually, we've been given a literary term by one of our listeners as to what this is called. So let's get literal. Apparently it's called metaphysical wit.
Metaphysical wit.
Metaphysical wit. And it is that sense of like you know, you stand on a piece of gum and it is a metaphor for how, right, as you go through life, things bounce off you and some things stick. And, you know what I mean? Like, something's...
Right.
Like, it's that kind of idea.
Expanding the pedestrian into something bigger, maybe?
Yeah, 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 yeah. And, you know, very much this contemporary musical theatre song,
mm-hmm,
in inverted commas.
Right.
Really, that is almost the defining factor,
yeah,
of a lot of it. And it's... You do get it quite a lot here.
Right. And it is intentional. I forget which Jason Harper Brown interview I was reading, but he talks about one of the... He went into this wanting to write a simple, elegant love story with good music, but the problem he found was it was very easy for the audience to get ahead of the characters, which then negates and simplifies the story, which I totally agree with. And the way to create that mystery without it feeling artificial is this exact structure, is to turn it on its head so you know the ending. It's impossible to get ahead of the characters because they already gave it to you, and then you must focus on the story in the middle, how we got there.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So I guess one of the key things that we want to talk about here is how many characters are in this show, Tommy?
There are two. They're rarely on stage together characters. At all.
Yeah. But is this the only musical that has that?
Maybe. It's certainly a structure borrowed from plays, for sure. There is something very, like, corely theatrical about this. I mean, you know, you wrote it right here. We have a whole term for it, the two-hander. There are hundreds of thousands of two-person plays that are written with this similar structure. There are very few, if any... other two-person musicals. Musicals just feel bigger.
I'm looking at my wall and I can't.
Yeah,
see anything.
I can think of a handful of like one-person shows, but not two-person shows.
And that's the thing is like there's even, you know, even if you've got two extremely core characters,
right?
Something like Once, for example, you've still got a chorus behind it, backing it up. And I think that's where you've always got that chorus there.
It's a structure logistical thing that is eminently comparable to the contemporary cinematic trend of the AV plot, which it might even be inspired by traditional musical theater. You think the golden age pieces of musical theater, you would have the A plot and the B plot, and the A plot happens on the full stage, and then they close the curtain, and the B plot happens in front of the stage. Drowsy Chaperone parodies this to fantastic extent. But even something like Hello, Dolly, if you follow that structure along with the scenic design in mind, it goes A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B all the way through. And in movies, that's termed Meanwhile Back at the Ranch, and it lets you tell your story the right way. So you can tell enough of your story and then meanwhile back at the ranch and jump to the other plot while something that we don't have to be too specific about happens off stage in the other plot. And then when what's happening on stage gets too boring or reaches a climax or a moment of mystery, you jump back to the first plot. And the structure of the show allows this two-hander to do an A-B plot. We can jump back and forth between them. Where if it was told forward, it would have to be two characters on stage the whole time, which is a little tiring, I imagine.
It would be relentless. Yeah. It would be, hellish.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone would get tired. The singers, the audience.
Well, that's it. But there you go. That kind of hits on its own point. Because obviously having only one person on stage at pretty much the whole time... The whole show feels very isolated and very bare.
Yes.
And it does get very repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one could argue Jason Robert Brown is like, I know.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole point is that you have these two people who have come into this relationship and have never really been cohesive together. They've never really had that moment of extreme togetherness.
Yeah, I believe,
except maybe at their wedding.
He uses the phrase, they're never really in the same place at the same time, both literally and metaphorically.
Exactly. So I think that could be an artistic thing, and that's maybe why he didn't do more duet-y stuff.
Yeah.
Because especially someone like Jason Robert Brown, who's very musical, very good at harmony, and likes writing interesting harmony.
Yeah.
I imagine the temptation would be there to write, you know, just a little bit more Yeah. You could be like, ah, but it'd be so good just to get this cool crunch.
Right.
But we just don't see it. Nope. So I like to think that mm-hmm. it is actually intentional, and you're supposed to just get this sense of this guy doesn't have any sense of what's going on with her. She doesn't have any sense of what's going on with him. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to believe that the relationship is never going to work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that is one of the questions of the show. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe I jumped the gun too much, but, like, don't you kind of want it to work out, and it's sad when it doesn't, even though you know that it won't, you know?
Nah.
Really?
Nah, not in any way. And this is actually, this is the big discussion that I have with everyone about the last 5 years. I think this is going to be our coup de grace, though, so let's not talk about it now.
Okay, we'll dance around it for another 45 minutes.
Woohoo! Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that is a discussion that needs to be had.
Well, then let's talk about this. This musical has had quite the journey, don't you think?
For sure.
And there, as our quiz question referenced, is steeped in a lot of Broadway gossip. And rumors and like exterior show changing forces. So shall we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm climbing uphill, Daddy, climbing uphill. I'm up every morning at 6 and standing in line with 200 girls who are younger and thinner than me, who have already been to the gym. I'm waiting 5 hours in line and watching the girls just coming and going in dresses that look just like this, till my number is finally called. When I walk in the room, there's a table.
Do you think this is an autobiographical musical?
I know. I mean, it does just kind of boil down to that, like, art thing. Like, oh, there will always be a piece of me in this.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, he had a difficult divorce.
Yeah.
And what apparently was a tumultuous relationship.
Mm-hmm. So the story...
He is New Yorker who's shot up very quickly.
Right.
I don't know much about his ex-wife or her life.
That's intentional.
Yeah. And... So who knows how much is there, but certainly for him,
right.
Like, you know.
So the story goes that Jason Robert Brown began writing this musical when he was married to New York actress Teresa O'Neill, and they went through a very contentious divorce with some, you know, divorce agreements that Jason Robert Brown, very specifically about this musical, would be allowed to continue to write it as long as it was not directly connected to their life. And specifically that O'Neill was not, you know, alluded to or referenced in the musical. And it's hard to tease out these particular details because they live in lawsuits that ended in settlements. And
exactly,
the lawsuits are centered around keeping these details private. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of this is hearsay and gossipy sort of stuff, which I don't like treading in a lot, but I think informs the story a whole bunch. But from performing in Skokie, Illinois, the show was supposed to transfer to the Kennedy Center, I believe.
The Lincoln Center, I believe.
Yeah. But was actually initially commissioned by the Lincoln Center and then like given an out-of-town tryout in Skokie. Well, something lawyers got involved, and the Lincoln Center and as original producers dropped the show, and it shopped around for new producers, and then eventually ended up premiering off Broadway maybe a year or 2 years later. Very much because Teresa O'Neill's lawyers alleged that the show was too close to their life, and Jason Robert Brown rewrote some songs and changed the character of Kathy a whole bunch to kind of fit that in.
Yep.
And that affects how I feel about this show in some big ways.
Yeah. But it's like, obviously the big one is the one that we've already talked about in the quiz question. Mm-hmm.
Right.
In that I Could Be in Love with Someone Like You was about an Irish, a Jewish man falling in love with an Irish woman.
Right. And it was rewritten to be Shiksa Goddess.
Yes.
And sources vary that, like, maybe there was initial protest to that song and then he rewrote it, but then O'Neill, you know, kind of backed down a little bit, but then it was too late and Shiksa Goddess was in the show instead. Who knows? It's hard. Yeah. It's really hard to tease some of this stuff up. And, you know, for structure's sake is the reason why I care.
Yeah, precisely.
But so
and I would love to know what else was different, because
right.
to me, mm-hmm. I mean, she's an actress.
Yeah.
Living in New York.
Yep.
She isn't, you know, she has jobs. She isn't like Tony Award winning.
Right.
You know, he is a writer.
Skyrocketing in fame.
Skyrocketing in fame in New York.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. It is interesting. There's one interview where they dance around whether he's going to call this show autobiographical or personal, and that he definitely lands on personal as opposed to autobiographical. And he has, because this has become more public knowledge, people have pressed Jason Robert Brown more specifically about this sort of thing. And he comes out saying, like, I've got a quote here about asking whether he was trying to demonstrate that someone was right and someone was wrong. And Jason says, honestly, I wasn't trying to settle any scores. I was just working through the very painful wreckage of a relationship that meant a lot to me. And so it's definitely walking that tightrope there.
Yeah.
But
the thing is, at the end of the day, if it's autobiographical, I don't mind. Like,
okay.
Because it's one of those things, I think he's done a good job of keeping it as balanced as possible. When we get into the big discussion,
yeah,
we'll talk a bit more about this. But I think, like you say, you write art from a certain place.
Yeah.
And you can tie, we've talked about this with Sondi before, you know, you can tie allusions to your life.
Right.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
This one, you know, might be a little bit close to the bone.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel it doesn't make it any worse art. In fact, almost it makes it more honest.
I think I
get the feeling you're disagreeing.
I agree with you on most points. I think the thing I disagree with you about is that it's balanced. I feel like this show gives a little more credit to Jamie than he deserves. And I only land on this conclusion through the autobiographical lens, which I think is why I struggle with it a little bit. Kathy's role reads very much to me as a female character written by a man in a bunch of moments.
I 100% agree with that, yes.
Which
yes.
simplifies it a lot. You know, you see more of it. I was astonished by how much more of her character you see just in the movie and, like, how much more backstory she gets. But, like, just listening to the album, just seeing the show on stage, Kathy's an actress and a lover, and that's about it. And is whiny and complainy. And that, because it is a maybe autobiographical story where Jason Robert Brown is writing himself and someone else, the fact that the someone else feels a little less complex, a little less fleshed out, a little more one-dimensional, feels kind of sexist. And I see this in, interestingly, like, because there are so many, you know, Amdram and semi-professional productions of this everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
I see this in reviews, right? Every review, or a whole bunch of reviews that I've read about these things, especially more contemporary ones, hint at or allude to, like, veiled sexism and some of the sexist nature of the plot. And, like, if we're analyzing this relationship linearly, like, let's say we're trying to lay blame into a relationship and or a breakup, and I know that's not how it works, and like things are much more complex than that, and this is overly simplifying thing. Jamie's the one who messed up. Jamie's the one who let his ego go to his head so that he couldn't hang out with Kathy. Jamie's the one who cheated on Kathy. Jamie's the one who, like, wasn't quite there for Kathy as she was struggling in this difficult time in her life. But it still reads in a bunch of ways as kind of balanced. You know, I wish Kathy were more flawed. I wish Kathy had also, you know, like, I don't see the parts where Kathy isn't trying to connect in this story.
Uh-huh.
And that, to me, because of the authorship, because of the autobiographical nature of it, smacks of sexism.
Yeah. So, I just find it really interesting because we seem to be sitting on total opposing camps, which is great.
Fascinating.
This is what makes for good podcasting.
Uh-huh.
I would agree. I think it is sexist. It is written through the eyes of Jason Robert Brown, who is, I would say, I'm quite a no holes barred kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not
the most sensitive.
Yeah. What you hear, it's some of his work, you know, people he's worked with, anecdotes, you know, things like that. You get the feeling he's very headstrong. Nothing wrong with that. Cool. But I think in this work, I would agree that the joy moments of Kathy aren't hugely joyous. They always feel a little bit...
Right.
What I would say, though, is if you flipped the storylines...
Okay.
It might feel slightly different because the first thing you do is you see Kathy in bits. You see broken woman.
Right.
And it's hard to build that back up because all you have is you're like, oh, but it's all going to end craply for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas the first time you see Jamie is this like, yes, I'm the best.
Right.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
And he does go downhill, but your first impression, I guess, what comes, the first impression you have is, wow, he's charismatic.
Right.
You know? So, I think where they flip, I mean, I don't know, I've never seen it, don't know, you know, no one's ever done that. That would be very illegal.
Right.
And I haven't listened to it in that way.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if that would maybe affect it.
Well, so I want to explode those two songs explicitly then. If we go from Still Hurting to, let's say, Shiksa Goddess. Although both Shiksa Goddess and I Could Be in Love with Someone Like You kind of serve the same purpose anyway.
Yes.
So we start with Still Hurting, which is a song Kathy sings almost entirely about Jamie. About half of the lines in that song begin with the word Jamie. She says, you know, Jamie's over, Jamie is gone, Jamie is about I feel so bad for this thing that you have done to me. And this thing we had that has gone away, go run, like all this sort of stuff, right? That's our introduction to Kathy, if we're just looking at the story linearly. Then we meet Jamie, and his initial meet-cute song with Kathy is basically a love song that might as well be subtitled You'll Do.
I love that.
It's like, you're not all these other people. I guess you're fine. Like, that's, you know, I've been waiting through Demica Schwartz and Erica Weiss and the Handelman twins. I've been waiting through Heather Greenblatt and Annie Linkus and Karen Pinkus and Lisa Katz. Like, thank God you're not these women. And as my boyfriend said as we watched the movie this morning, something like, wow, that's really awkward pillow talk. Like, you're breaking my mother's heart. Thank God you're not all these women. Let's do it. That's a shiesty thing to do. That's a shiesty thing to do. And even if it's not in the context of the movie, where it's just him singing to himself about, like, how excited he is to have met this girl who is not all the other girls, who's different this time... He doesn't say Kathy at all in that song.
No. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. So two things.
Mm-hmm.
Two things. Number one, if you look at line, by the minute I first met you, I could barely catch my breath. I've been standing for years with the phone in my hand like an idiot scared to death. You've got this kind of like puppy dog, oh my God, I'm really, really, really like you.
Yeah.
Like your argument about, you know, all the other girls don't matter now, I've met you. That's the same for any relationship.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But then
all the other guys for us didn't matter until we met the one I haven't met.
But then
you know what I mean?
Right. Like, but then he goes through an increasingly offensive list of qualities that wouldn't matter with a negative connotation to them. It really turns me off. Like, some of them, you know, if you had a tattoo, if you had a pierced tongue, doesn't matter, right? Like, these bad things, if you had these bad things, it doesn't matter. If you came from Spain or Japan or the back of the van, and there's an implicit characterization and comparison between those three things, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you were from Spain or Japan or, you know, popped out of the back of a van. Those things are all the same to me, right? Mm-hmm. If you once were in jail or if you once were a man, let's not even talk about the transphobia there. Like, and on and on and on. What's the good quality of Kathy that makes you excited to be with her?
Yeah. No, like, totally. But this is point number two.
Okay.
This makes Jamie look like an ass.
Right.
So, my point is, if this is autobiographical, if uh-huh. this is personal, he's writing himself as a selfish ass. And I think the majority of reviews say Jamie is a selfish ass.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly with the film.
Yes.
Maybe just because there are more reviews
and
for the film.
And maybe because you'd see more explicit stuff there.
Yeah. And certain things have changed, which right. I completely disagree with, but we'll talk about it in a minute.
Right.
So there is that sense of, you know, James, right. and I think from the get-go, what you have
yeah.
are these two hugely flawed characters being presented to you from stage one.
Yeah.
You have Kathy, who is whiny and, like, grow a backbone, Kathy, and you have Jamie, who is selfish ass. And so what you want to see is, well, how the hell did this work? And then you right. realize, oh, it never worked.
Right. And I think...
And that's the story.
I suspect this is why my tinges of sexism are related to it being an autobiographical piece. Because uh-huh. Jason Robert Brown wrote it this way. And I can't quite draw the connection there, which is frustrating. Uh-huh. But something about, you know, Jamie's an ass, but doesn't quite get his comeuppance at the end. He still breaks up with her. You know, he doesn't fall into a cake like Cruella de Vil in 102 Dalmatians.
Yes.
And that, while he's not exonerated, certainly, he uh-huh. also doesn't get his comeuppance. Doesn't, you know, like... He's still the controller in the relationship. He's still the manipulator in the relationship. And Jason Robert Brown wrote himself that way.
That's really interesting that you just said the manipulate thing, because I think, again, I think it's a balance. I think they both have their moments.
Yeah.
100%.
When do you think Kathy is a manipulator?
If I didn't believe in you.
How?
Jason. Because in that moment,
yeah.
he is basically saying, I am so excited for this part of my career. I understand that you are hurting and that you're in a really bad place in yours, and that's mm-hmm. fine. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But for the moment, can you not just be happy for me right now?
Yeah.
And she relentlessly, you know, keeps hitting him back in the face. Now, that is a couple's argument right,
right.
there.
But I think, if we relinearize the story, the counterpoint mm-hmm. to If I Didn't Believe in You is, mm-hmm. What's the name of that song? See, I'm Smiling, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe not explicitly the same specific time, but they're at the same point in the relationship, right? They could...
I would say it's more the one before See, I'm Smiling, which is the one that I never remember. A part of that.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Because See, I'm Smiling is the mirror of Nobody Needs to Know.
Interesting. Okay.
I would say.
The connection I was drawing between See, I'm Smiling and If I Didn't Believe in You is that they yep. are both very explicitly discussing the moment in their relationship when he starts going to all the parties and she doesn't. Right?
Yeah, okay.
And they're
yeah.
differing opinions to those sorts of things.
Yeah.
He is of the idea that, like, I need to go to these. It's a job thing. And she's uh-huh. the idea that, like, it's my fucking birthday and you don't need to hang out with these jerks again because yeah. I know, because they always know, which is a thing she says, that you're going to be hanging out with these girls in your life who aren't me. And yeah. that's a problem, and clearly it is, because then he does.
Yeah, but I think he already has at that point. So uh-huh. that's why I always put CM Smiling with...
Like post-cheating?
Yeah, because that's where I think he's going back to.
Interesting.
You know
okay.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's because, I would say, like, the... if I didn't believe in you party.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because this is the publishing of his book party. This is the first thing. This is this is his big moment, basically.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if she got a Broadway show,
yeah.
He would be wanting. You know, she would be wanting him to go to that party.
Yeah.
Right. So this is his big moment, and she just can't see that. And whether it is just because she's disappointed that she's only just got summer stock again,
mm-hmm.
or whether there's this creative jealousy side of things.
Yeah.
I think she is being manipulative in that song. I'm not saying he never is, but right. I'm saying in that moment she is. And that's what I mean about the balance.
Yeah.
I think there are these moments that kind of just complement yeah. each other all
I
the
do,
way through.
I mean, I do think our disagreement speaks to the success of this show. Like, I think the differences in how you would perceive these things do come down to specific directing choices and specific momentary yep. choices. I think you could swing the show in both directions.
Yeah, and I've seen it done.
Yeah.
And I think what it all boils down to is I think it depends on your life.
Yeah.
It depends what you've experienced.
Right.
As to who you either relate to or who you can see yourself in different moments.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you're almost like mentally tallying up.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, one of the wonderful things of the simplicity of this show is you are meant to read yourself into both halves of this relationship.
Absolutely.
And like picture the arguments you've had or the problems you've had or the successes and joys in a relationship you've had in these individual moments.
Yep. And it's like, because I've had like shouting matches about this show, you know, with people because of my opinions and, you know, a lot of the musical theatre fans that I know are female, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I found certainly tend to side with Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying all females side with Kathy, whatever. But certainly ones that I have. And so obviously me, and I'm not saying I side with Jamie,
right?
But I really see Jamie's point. We just end up really butting heads. All kind of comes down to if I didn't believe in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Because I've been, that thing is I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think this will be a disagreement of ours. I think if I didn't believe in you, she would have been just fine. Or at least exactly where she is.
What do you mean, sorry?
So his thesis in that song, if you will, is if I didn't believe in you, we'd never have gotten this far, right? If I didn't believe in you, then the implication is like, if I didn't believe in you, you wouldn't have the modicum of success that you have right now, or you wouldn't be pushing and trying. Is
no,
that not?
See, I don't believe that it's that at all.
Okay.
No, I think it's this, what he's saying is, if he didn't believe in her and her success and that she was a good actress, what she's having these doubts about, what it would mean is that there would be no substance to their relationship. It wouldn't be, if I didn't believe in you, you would be shit. He is not saying, I'm the one that's helped you through all of this.
Uh-huh.
I think what he's saying is, this respect and belief, this like two-way street
right.
that we have here,
yeah.
Is what keeps us going. Now, what this is the thing that you will always have in creative couples,
mm-hmm.
because creative jealousy is one of the biggest bitches of all.
Yeah,
there's nothing quite like that feeling because you don't have a leg to stand on,
right?
And a lot of the time, particularly with acting, you can't explain why you didn't get that part.
Right.
And there's nothing really more that you can do. It's just that you're not an inch taller, you know? And these things really, really build up inside you.
Yeah.
It
feels like, to me, it feels like such a selfish statement. If I didn't believe in you, we'd never have gotten this far.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. As in we, the relationship.
Right. Like the...
Because what he's saying is, I believe in you. Can you not just believe in me, even just this one moment? Because what she's doing is like, we can't go to this party because I'm really upset right now.
Yeah.
And this is a big, big deal for him. This is a big party. This is a very important event. It's like saying, you know, we can't go to your debut night because I'm not feeling it.
Right.
And that's why he says, I'm going.
Yeah.
That's that. She would be going, if it was her show, if it was her Broadway show, uh-huh. she would obviously be going, right. and that's that. But what's it really about, you know?
Right.
And that's what it goes into. And it's this sense of creative jealousy. Because the thing is, I've been on both sides in this song. Mm-hmm. I've been the manipulative person who's like, I can't get over my own neuroses here.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want you to be happy at this point because right. I'm not.
Right.
And I've been on the other side where it's like, it's finally going right. You know the struggles that I've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going right. Please just be on my side here.
Yeah.
Because you're actually the only one that whose opinion I care about.
Right.
And the fact that I don't have that upsets me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've convinced me to like Jamie more, but it's definitely a more complex yeah. song, I think, than I gave it credit for.
So would you say, to kind of close this off, mm-hmm. well, no, because we've still got to have this discussion. I've already like made half of my points. I'm excited to hear more about it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ask me anyway. Would you say to close off this discussion? Then we'll move on to the next thing.
Well, I was going to say, would you say that you side with one more than the other? Can you not see it as a balance at all?
I still think Kathy got the short end of the stick. I really do. Because Jamie still cheats on her, and that's a problem, clearly, in their relationship. And is a problem that was established earlier. The minute you get married, every other woman in the world finds you attractive.
Yes.
And like, he's predisposed for this.
Yes.
With some really stereotypical sexist undertones. I shouldn't care what she thinks because I can't fuck her anyway. Like,
yes.
Kathy doesn't say things like that.
No. But she does say manipulative things. Anyway, no, I think... It's just interesting. It's just yeah. interesting because it's you know, it's two sides of the coin.
I 100% didn't expect this. This is fantastic.
This is great. It's really, yeah. really good. Let's talk about the movie.
Let's do it.
Pause for break.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I am not always on time. Please don't expect that from me. I will be late, but if you can just wait, I will make it eventually. Not like it's in my control. Not like I'm proud of the fact. But anything other than being exactly on time, I can do. I don't know why people run. I don't know why things fall through. I don't know how anybody survives in this life without someone like you. I could protect and preserve. I could say no and goodbye. But why, Jamie?
Summers till the world explodes. 'cause I need to see you with you.
So many years I need to be with you.
I will never be complete.
I will never be alive.
I will never change the world until I do.
So, a lot of opinions about the movie.
Yeah.
Glad it exists.
Yes.
Think it was reasonably well made, to be honest.
Yeah.
Great casting.
Yes. Oh, yes. Anna Kendrick and Jeremy Jordan knock it out of the park.
Absolutely. The first time you see Jeremy Jordan is in his boxer shorts. Mm. And
I mean, that's,
call
a,
me,
that's enough,
you know,
for the movie.
A dick pig, but I'm gay.
Yeah.
I was sold in that one moment. He's very sexy in that song.
Yes.
He
and
wins,
in general.
He wins you over. Yeah. But I think what the movie does highlights a lot of the problems with the show.
It fundamentally changes the story because they're both in every scene, which on a surface level is just kind of confusing.
Yeah. And looks so weird.
Yeah. And they don't do a good job of telegraphing the time travel-y bit of it all.
Yeah, I read an article with an interview from the director, Richard LeGravenese. Don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. Sorry, Italy. Where he was talking about this, and apparently they did a lot of audience feedback about that, where as soon as it ended, he would like run up on the stage and be like, do you need signposts?
Yeah.
And the audience were pretty much like, no, don't spoon feed us.
Right.
And they were like, but did you know what was happening? They were like, well, no, not at first, but we got there.
Yeah. And I
think that's the thing.
It kind of recasts it as opposed to being two oppositely linear stories, more of a like conglomeration of non-linear anecdotes. It becomes less important. Like Jeremy Jordan's story is generally traveling forward and Anna Kendrick's story is generally traveling backwards, but we jump around in interesting ways. And you don't quite, it doesn't matter, you know, specifically, like whether this was this far back or this far back or that far back or which party it is.
Yeah.
You know?
I would agree with that, actually. I think particularly for the later years.
Yes. Because they
don't... That's a post-wedding, it gets very...
Right. And if you don't know the musical, the non-movie musical per se, it gets a little more difficult to tell whether this is a Jamie moment or a Kathy moment, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Other than the fact that the other person just sat there looking bleak at the whole
thing.
Like, this is the thing that I just didn't get as I was like...
Yeah.
Or this is why when you're directing the show,
you
never direct it with two people on stage because you never have a conversation where it's like, I'm talking and I'm monologuing and you are smiling sometimes. Maybe
like in between lyrics, like, I don't really get what you're...
I mean,
why does this have to be...
Yeah.
What do you...
Like, oh, it's just, it's so bad because it's not natural.
It's really stilted.
At all.
Yeah.
Now, could they have ever filmed it another way?
Probably
I don't
not.
Think so.
Yeah.
But it, what that just does is it highlights a fundamental issue with the material.
Yes.
But on the stage, you get away with it because you can get away with stuff on stage. So maybe that means, you know,
I do,
it didn't make sense in terms
on
of
the,
film.
On the slew of, like, stage to film adaptations of musicals. Yeah. I would still rank this one very high.
I 100% would agree, to be honest, yeah.
It captures the, you know, the feeling and the essence of the stage musical while capitalizing on some of the movie tools you get that you don't get on stage, but not overly relying on them and not totally rewriting the story to fit into a movie.
Yep. Yeah, and I think they do well, like, speaking of rewrites. You got it there, like the little updates that they make to bring it into, you know, 2014.
Some of them are pretty necessary. I laughed this morning. Do you know about, so I saw your book at a Borders in Kentucky. Do you know the store Borders Books and Music?
Yeah, we had Borders.
Yeah. Do you have them anymore?
No.
Right.
Liquidation, mate.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
And so they change it to Target, which I totally wasn't expecting and wasn't intended to be a laugh line, but I, you know, missed the next 10 seconds.
Exactly.
It was so hilariously funny.
It's cute. And I think that's fair. That's the thing, is like a lot of younger, you know, they're kind of appealing to that Tumblr generation who might not have found it.
I mean, I wonder if that speaks to a bigger question I have about this musical, because I do, this musical sits in one of those, in a contemporary musical theater pocket of hyper contemporary references that sometimes bother me. And those are the things they change. The other one I wrote down here, these are the people that cast Russell Crowe in a musical, which is a much better joke than Linda Blair as well.
Oh my God, absolutely. Because the thing is, Linda Blair, when she went into Greece, was actually okay.
Right. Russell Crowe, when he was in the movie of Les Mis, was not. this is...
Oh my God, wait. I spoke to someone recently who loved Russell Crowe. And they were like, yeah, I thought he was just amazing. And I was like,
immediately unfriend them?
Well, that's the thing. I was like, actually, I fundamentally will never get along with you now.
If you, what's the, at the beginning of One Day More, it is very easy to use all of the actors' names and slot them into the parts they're singing. Russell Crowe, Russell Crowe, Russell Crowe, Russell Crowe, Russell Crowe. And then Helen Bottom Carter, Helen Bottom Carter, Helen, it's lots of fun.
Hugh Jackman.
Right? Yeah. That's how I sing the song
from
now
on. I'm into that. That's
anyway, fun. Contemporary updates in musical theater, or like handful after handful of Doritos, which I particularly enjoy, but is the sort of thing that will date a musical very quickly.
For sure.
Cell phone usage, email usage.
Yeah, I'm sure we've talked about this before. I can't remember which one it was in.
Yeah.
I feel like it must have been a contemp.
Yeah.
But when you're doing, it's like, for example, in Edges.
Right.
The Facebook song.
Yes.
Is the most outdated number in all of musical theater now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it changes so fast. Oklahoma feels more current than the Facebook song.
Right. And so what I wonder, like, is this, I feel like this is a publishing thing that authors should start doing. I've seen it in other places where, like, you know, if you do a show like Spamalot, there are a couple director's notes or, you know, stage directions that allow you some changing of some references.
Totally. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Like shows playing down the street or shows even, I can't think of them now, but there are a bunch of musicals where it's
Avenue Q, for example.
Yeah.
For Only for Now.
Right. They'll let you update it and like give you notes that way. Because that's important, because it was funny then, and if you don't update it, it doesn't become funny anymore.
Yeah.
But it's important, like, when you prep your manuscript to, like, send off to MTI or whoever, it is really important that you highlight these lines and explicitly allow these changes, because otherwise your show is going to be immediately dated, especially if your show exists, you know, anytime 1990 or... later, because then it isn't quite a period piece yet.
Exactly. Well, I would say anything post 2000.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not a period piece at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that you're talking about are still completely relevant.
Right.
Without it being set in a particular time. But what you do is, by mentioning these things, you're setting it in a particular time.
Right. In a time, you know, that will go over your future audience's heads if you want the show to have a life beyond here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, last 5 years will live and thrive forever and ever in amateur productions.
Yeah.
But, like, what happens when we don't have Doritos anymore?
Exactly. You say handful after handful of Tostitos.
Ooh. Is that a rhyme line?
Yeah.
Nope. Doritos doesn't rhyme with anything.
Well, there you go. Tostitos is perfect. Is Tostitos pizza rolls?
Yeah.
I'm really sad that in all my times in the States, I've never had a pizza roll.
You're not missing much.
Are you sure, though?
Well, I mean, I had a bunch of Scottish candy that one time, so maybe you're missing some things. But, like, on the spectrum of good American food, Tostitos are pretty low.
Really?
Yeah.
It's quite sad, actually. I thought they'd be the best thing that I've just never had.
Since
you can microwave them.
Yeah, you can microwave most American foods. We're big on our microwaves. Do you have microwaves?
Yeah. You guys don't have kettles, though. I still can't get over
We have a kettle. We have a kettle. It takes forever because our electricity is lower voltage. But we have an electric kettle that will boil for coffee. We don't drink tea.
Thank you.
We poured it all in the harbor.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, you did. There's no,
no going back.
Don't mention the tea. Before we move away from the movie, though, I want to talk about something that almost offends me.
Okay.
That's it. And that is in the number called Nobody Needs to Know. So here's the thing about relationships, infidelity, etc. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert, in Nobody Needs to Know, Jamie Song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, if you this from the stage show, it's Jamie waking up with Elise, his secretary, and you realize that they've been having a relationship whilst he is still with Kathy. He has been unfaithful with Elise. At the end of the musical, Jamie and Elise are still together. You don't know what happens next. You don't, you know, he's not like, I'm marrying Elise. Elise is the one for me.
Right.
But he does kind of say that in Nobody Needs to Know. In the movie, you have this, what I just call, I don't know, cinematic jerk-off moment, where it's like Jamie sitting still, looking forward with all these women, kind of speedily, you know, to become one Spice Girls video style, run and like drape themselves on him and like sexual positiony stuff. And, you know, just including different characters you've seen throughout the whole movie, implying that he has been this mad shagger. And this is where I have a really big problem, because in that moment, Jamie is undoubtedly a dick.
Yes.
Jamie is undoubtedly the baddie.
Yes.
Jamie is undoubtedly, he kind of doesn't have a leg to stand on. If he's just this mad shagger.
Right.
Being like, that's all I really care about is just having the sex. Then, yeah, fair. He's a total ass and Kathy deserves much better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the musical, he has gotten to a stage where his relationship is so difficult and he has fallen for Elise. He has fallen out of love with Kathy and he has since fallen in love with Elise. And they are starting a relationship whilst, obviously, he's still married to Kathy. But that is completely different to being a mad shagger.
Yes.
And why Jason Robert Brown gave that a seal of approval, I'll never know. I think it's... And that actual moment kind of made me just not like the film a little bit, because it was like, well, it's a different story now.
Right.
You've picked a side and... It's just not. It's not right. It's changing. It's changing the story fundamentally.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts about it. I'm very passionate about it because I think there is. I can understand Jamie if he just has Elise.
Right. If it's just
I can't understand Jamie if he's a mad shagger. Yeah.
Yeah. I must have looked down at my notes during that moment because I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. I was like, my jaw just like, it was one of those like, you know in The Mummy?
Yes.
You know the guys, the big mummies with the big mouths?
Yeah, that launched like the spiders out of their mouths or whatever they are, or beetles or something. Yeah.
I was one of them in that moment.
Yeah.
I was just really upset by it because it's also making a statement.
Mm-hmm. It's awfully sexist and chauvinistic that, like, that's... you know, it not that it like paints it in the biggest of lights, but it, there's still some endorsement and condoning of it by demonstrating the promiscuous male in the relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like you can still get out of this and be fine in a couple months. That's an expected thing. I'm having emotional struggles. I think this speaks to why I struggle with Jamie's character in general, even if it's just a one, even if it's just with Elise. And on the fence, like you're starting a relationship and then it is hard to end your current relationship while you're being drawn into this relationship you're starting, for sure. But that there is this kind of stereotypical expectation that like men are men.
Yeah, I don't think it comes from that. I think it comes from humans are humans, and we make connections, and connections fade.
Right.
Like, I don't know about you, but I have been in relationships that I have been in for far too long, and their time was fully up.
Right.
And all I was doing was making myself unhappy by shutting myself off to making connections with other people.
Yeah.
Because for one reason or another, it wasn't right to break up at that time.
Right. Yeah, I think the thing I struggle with is the parts of Jamie and Kathy's relationship that we see failing are their kind of like socio-emotional parts, right? Jamie wants Kathy to come to the party so that they can, because they're in love and because they're dating and or married or wherever they are at that point. And they spend time with each other because that's what people in relationships do. And that's the problem that Jamie has. He's not getting that. And then the fulfillment we see isn't like Jamie having a good time socially with a girl. It's them having sex, you know? And there's an assumption that other things are going on behind the scenes. But like, are we assuming that because of this, Jamie and Kathy aren't having sex? I mean, maybe, probably. But then like, show us that.
But how do you show that in a one-hander? Do you know what I mean? In a monologue?
Right, like, exactly. Like, that's certainly a problem with the structure.
You know, but I think what I would say is See I'm Smiling completely hints towards that they have not had any sort of physical connection.
Right.
Because what she's saying is, we're laughing.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Right.
That's just, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's her shining light.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's okay because we're smiling together. Yeah.
But then he has to go to be with other people, presumably Elise.
Yeah, probably is Elise. But that's the thing. Now, the birthday thing is asshole, like very asshole. And again, keeps it balanced.
Right.
Absolutely. The birthday thing, like, you know, you could stay with your wife on her birthday. I think that's fair.
Right.
But what... Again, I'm getting very personal and I don't know if I should. But like... I've been at the end of that relationship where it's awful and all you feel is misery. Like very personal.
Okay.
But whilst I was breaking up with one of my boyfriends that I've had in the past of a long term relationship, he just didn't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had moved on. Like I wasn't in love with him anymore. And in so many words, it was like, no, I can't accept this. I still love you. We can work this out. And in my head, I was like, I just don't think we can.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't get it. And it was a long distance relationship and he was staying at mine, so he couldn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we weren't just going to block each other out and not speak to each other. So we were just hanging out and, you know, having good times and laughing and stuff. And he was like, look, we're laughing. Everything's like, why can't we just have this? And I'm like, it's not about that. Like,
it's
absolutely
different.
We can laugh.
Yeah.
But that isn't the patch that it needs.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's so much deeper than that. And it's we've gone so far.
Yeah.
And so when I have a song like See I'm Smiling, my heart breaks because I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally get it.
Yeah.
But the other side is still there.
Right.
Maybe this is why.
Yeah.
I get Jamie a little bit more and can see that it was just a relationship that was never going to work
mm-hmm.
Because she couldn't see how much the cracks had opened, just to borrow lines from the show. He had kind of tried as hard as he could, but it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I see that. I do. I think the thing it speaks to me very much is like, because I'm totally conflicted too. I may be on Kathy's side, but only just a bit. But that, like, how, you know, in the human experience, in, you know, this context of the quote-unquote breakup, which is, like, a pretty common human experience on the greater scale, but that it is still so nuanced and conflicted and emotional, and, like, no one wins. No one wins this show. No one wins this breakup. They're both worse off than they were. You know, and it makes it, like, heart-wrenching and sad. And then, like, you start questioning, like, but no one, you know, it's just a bullshitty human thing. Like, no one was physically hurt during this. No one, you know, has any lasting physical or emotional physical or monetary or personal scars. But there's huge emotional scars.
Yeah, definitely.
On both sides. And how that develops slowly and surreptitiously and, like, you know, just riding underneath all this guise of happiness.
Yeah.
You know, it's a super depressing show from that lens.
I 100% would say it is. And, you know, you can't leave being like, ah, yes.
Right.
Because there isn't, I don't think there is joy in it.
No.
At all.
Yeah.
Even if you think, Kathy will be okay.
Right.
She's much better off without him. Absolutely. That is 100% probably the case. And vice versa. They're not meant to be together.
Right.
But you do get this sense of, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? This outpouring of, ugh.
I think, and I wonder if this is a philosophical difference, but the concept I think I struggle with is the, like, they were or weren't meant to be together. That, like, that is a thing. From my perspective, I think a relationship exists in the moments and in the specific parts. And certainly you may be specifically predisposed to have a more successful or less successful relationship based on a whole slew of factors, you know, personal interests and commonalities and, you know, rapport and things like that.
Yeah.
But, like, the relationship doesn't exist in stasis. Relationships exist in moments of interaction, in moments of being together, in those songs, in those reactions to each other. And if you accept that as a truth, which I think there are arguments against it, but, like, if you just, you know, move past that, it is then, I think, difficult to make an argument that, like, oh, they're doomed from the start. Beyond the structure of the musical, beyond the, well, of course, because that ends with the breakup letter.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they'll never work out, I think, is a... Having seen plenty of relationships where my initial reaction was they'll never work out, and then 15 years later they're married. I don't know. It's something that affects my view of this show, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Do I think that they're doomed from the start? No. But I do think things happen that drive huge cleaves in between them.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess then this is the question. Are there moments in the show where either of them made the wrong choice if the end goal is to stay together?
Do I think there could have been, like, a turning point?
Do you think there were points where either Kathy or Jamie could have done a thing that would have more positively affected their relationship? Like, if Kathy was like, fine, I'll go to the party.
Yeah,
or...
I generally think that's a big one.
Right.
Like, it would work for a point. It maybe would have added, you know, a sixth year.
Right.
Onto the relationship.
Years. Yeah.
But I think at its heart is this creative jealousy thing.
Yeah.
What we never do see is the moments where, you know, Jamie's career actually starts to go down a little bit.
Right.
Because he is just on this upswell.
Yeah.
That's just riding and riding and riding.
Yeah.
As we see Kathy kind of go the opposite way.
Right.
We never see that other moment where it's like Kathy's on and up.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you have that moment in Shmuel's song where it's like, where he's basically saying how much he believes in her and wants her to do well and thinks she can do well. And that does give you that kind of like hope moment. And then she ends up in Ohio.
Right.
And it's just a really, it's a really tricky one.
Yeah.
Because I think as well with Kathy, you never really know what she wants.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
She never says, I want to be a Broadway superstar.
You know what she doesn't want. I will not be the girl, you know, back at home in the burbs with the baby, the garden of herbs.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. You know, she wants that big city moment.
Yeah.
But you don't know, like, is she happy with Ohio? You know what I mean? Or what is this bigger thing that she wants?
It is.
Is that a fundamental thing with
you
her
know,
as
I'm,
an actress?
I'm getting more on board with your professional or artistic jealousy theory because he has the line, I will not fail so you can be comfortable. And she has the line about, like, I'm not going to be a trophy wife. And those are both in, like, those are both in congruence with each other. They agree
absolutely
on that, right?
Absolutely.
But then he just happens to be more talented in the thing he's doing or have more luck or whatever than she does.
And that's the thing is, I think if he asked her that question and she could reply, and if she was being fully honest, she would say, yeah, do you know what? I want you to fail because this is unfair.
Right.
And that is totally fair. That is that's the most human reaction that you can have.
Yeah.
You don't want, you know what I mean? That isn't what you want, but that would make you feel better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you, it's the all these things with creativity in the industry that you just can't explain.
Right. Yeah. Well, because
there's no reason to it.
It's so much luck and, you know, subjectivity and things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, but then it feels unfair when you both, like, Jamie doesn't put in any work to get his success other than writing his stories.
Writing the story, yeah, exactly.
And she puts
really
in three or four songs worth of work. I'm climbing a hill, you know, all these things, and gets very little out of it. And that's frustrating. It is so frustrating,
so frustrating
when your work is incongruent with your results.
Exactly, exactly. So this is it. Like, I'm not saying, oh, Kathy, come on, buck up your ideas. I get it. Like, I couldn't cope.
Yeah.
And I think the best solution for them is for her not to date a creative.
Yeah. Do you think people should only date people as successful as them?
But it's not success. It's your industry.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You need to be an extremely strong actor, a strong person who is an actor, if you want to date another actor, because you will always have those moments where one person is doing better than the other.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know if it works in other industries, you know, like someone maybe climbs the career ladder faster than
the
other one.
It's hard to
speak
to areas we're not a part of.
Yeah, but there's nothing in acting where there's no linear, there isn't a ladder.
Right. Yeah, it's luck.
Do you know what I mean? So it's all luck. And so it would take a very, very strong person, I think, to hold a relationship with another actor. So, no, I'm not saying it's a success thing. I think you can both be successful and you can both be appreciative of each other because one man's success is another man's. I mean, I don't give a shit.
Right.
Like, I would never date another director.
Yeah.
I physically couldn't. I can barely be friends with other directors. Like, I find it so hard.
Yeah.
I find it really, really hard. That's my issue.
Right.
That's 100% my thing that I need to go over. But I find it so hard.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I mean,
what do you think?
I think I agree. You know, I have been, maybe in a lesser extent, but I have been of the opinion that, like, everyone, specifically everyone in either theater or education or both, should have friends or compatriots both inside and outside their industries. Like, it's important to have people who don't understand what you do, who are a part of your life, you know,
so much,
because it lets you bounce things off, because it lets you get like an outside opinion, because it lets you vent to someone who is not going to try to provide you a solution.
Exactly. And that is so important, especially in a relationship.
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, maybe, like, if we're hypothesizing here, but maybe that's Jamie and Kathy's downfall, is Jamie is like, here's a headshot guy and a new backstage. I'm going to help you. I'm going to do what I can to help you, which, of course, is the relationshipy thing to do, but is also not terribly helpful. You know,
no, because
in an industry of luck,
fix it.
Right.
Yeah, he can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really tough.
Yeah. Jimmy and Tommy solve relationship issues.
We do it all, mate. We do it all.
Ask Judy or whatever the column was. Send us your questions.
Yeah. God.
We'll give you poor life advice in return.
We build a treehouse. I keep it from shaking. Little more glue every time that it breaks. Perfectly balanced. And then I start making conscious, deliberate mistakes. All that I ask for is one little corner, one private room at the back of my heart. I found one. She sends out battalions to claim it and blow it apart. I grip and she grips, and faster we're sliding and spilling. And what can I do? The bed, kid. Take me inside you. I promise I won't lie to you. Hold on, don't cry yet. I won't let you go.
Jimmy, you've written here in our notes document, jarring music, hummable melodies, and memorable songs, a rant by Jimmy Mitchell.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So it's not clear from the title.
I'll buckle up.
Yeah. So, it's not going to be a huge rant.
Uh-huh.
But, like, 90% of the reviews, particularly of the movie,
mm-hmm.
That I read, were saying, like, song is pretty crap, you know, I left, I couldn't remember any of them. Right. I'm sick of this. I'm sick to death of this. We talked about it in Merrily, very briefly. We didn't hit home. I didn't rant. I'm ready to rant. What movie that isn't a musical do you leave from where you're quoting paragraphs of dialogue?
Right.
Which one is that? Sorry. Oh, wait, none of them, because that's not the done thing. Where did it ever become the thing where you have to leave a musical singing the songs?
Uh-huh.
What, 1950?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, look, we're 60 years, you know, 60, almost 70 years. Is that right?
Yeah. Jimmy Does Math, the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What the hell? Why is... And also, these reviewers weren't reviewing things in the 1950s. Why are they saying this?
Right.
Well, like, please understand the art form.
Yeah.
Please respect the art form, mm-hmm. because you would respect theatre in that way. You know, if we had a theatre to film adaptation, you wouldn't be saying, ah, you know, the monologues weren't memorable. Like, you would not say that. You would be saying, oh, it affected me emotionally.
Yeah.
But what you get for this is, do you know what? Like, the story was actually pretty good, but as a musical, meh.
Yeah.
What? Are you kidding? You don't understand anything.
It is. I definitely saw in a lot of reviews of the movie that, like, this poked the edges of people who understand musical theater. Like, people came to see this movie who hadn't seen a musical before. And, you know, the audience member who's surprised that they're singing. The same way you have in something like Les Mis or Sweeney Todd. I do think that begs the question of, does this story have to be a musical?
Absolutely. But actually, I would 100% say it does, because look at the conversation that we've had.
Right.
If this was a play, I don't think we would have been as stimulated.
Yeah.
And if it was just a series of monologues, there wouldn't be as much of a resale value.
I agree. I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, totally. And that's one of the reasons why I love the musical theater art form.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes more than plays, because you do connect with it in a different way, because the music taps into this part of your soul,
mm-hmm.
and you hear it differently than you would if it was just someone speaking it.
Yeah.
Sure, okay, you might not leave the bloody theatre after one watching singing it all.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. But that isn't the point. The point is, as with any good book, as with any good play text, you go back to it and you listen and you're like, ah, great. Things do not need a ha ma 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 bull melody.
Uh-huh.
They really, really don't.
I also, like, I hum these songs to myself all the time.
Well, exactly. I'm sorry, they're catchy as hell.
Yeah.
Like, sure, they don't have a hook. Sure, they don't have a, you know, verse, chorus, bridge,
right.
chorus. Like, fine. Thank right. God they don't have that, because that would be generic and boring.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, right, I'm not saying all musicals, therefore, need to be narrative and discourse, you know, discordant and things like that. No, uh-huh. absolutely not. There's a great time and a place for a bop.
Mm-hmm.
I love a bop.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying you can only have one or the other.
Right.
One is much better than the other. No, the proof is in the pudding. The pudding is in the content.
The content is in the refrigerator. The refrigerator is in the kitchen.
Yes. And that's just my two cents. I hate that opinion. It pisses me off. And this is why we'll never get respect.
Yes.
People are saying, this isn't good because X. And people
because
are like,
of the structure.
Oh, that last 5 years one. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There's no good songs in it.
Right.
What?
This is why I will never be a critic, despite how much time I spend critiquing the things I love, but like that I despise that label. Is because the explicit purpose of a critic is to like tell you whether you should go see the thing. Right?
Yep.
But somehow that has ballooned into like, they're supposed to be the expert. They're supposed to be the
exactly.
person who like knows enough to tell you why you might or might not enjoy it, or, you know, why it is well structured or not structured. But somehow the job of critic has instead ballooned into this weird, bizarre, like uninformed commentary place.
Yep.
I hate it. I hate it so much. And I read reviews all the time and hate myself when it happens.
I know, but it's just so unnecessary.
It's the only way into a show.
Yeah. And I will read reviews. And those moments where they say X is really bad, I hate those moments. I'm just like, I actually don't care about what's bad. Can you tell me what's good? Why should I see it?
Right.
Don't tell me why I shouldn't see it, please.
Yeah.
I would like to make that decision.
Right.
For myself.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. And it is 100% affecting people's perception
mm-hmm.
of our art form.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that, I would say, is the main beef. People don't like musicals. Legit actors, for example, don't like musicals because they're just camp and unnecessary.
Right.
I'm sorry. You know, we've just spoken for an hour about one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop it.
Yeah.
I'm good at rants. That was stupid. But, like... it really pisses me off. And it was just because it was review after review after review, and I'm like, I'm sorry, this is some of the most interesting and intricate music that we've actually ever had.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jason Robert Brown does things that other people just don't.
Right.
And, like, have you done your research before you've seen this movie? Probably not. And I know you're not expecting your audience to do their research before this movie, beyond your review. Right. But that's why you should be doing the research. You're writing exactly. the review. You're the shortcut for everyone else. You're not allowed yep. to take the shortcut.
Yep. So why not just say, instead of, the music's crap, didn't remember anything once I left, why not say, the music, sometimes at the start, you can't actually quite tap into what it's really about. But when you go home and listen to it on any of the free streaming devices that you can,
right.
You'll find that there's actually a lot more depth yeah. in there. And that's really cool because it's got re-listenable. Right. Like, yeah. come on.
Right. Or better come yet, on, I'm not a music reviewer, so don't feel qualified to talk about the music here. Let's talk about the story, you know?
Yeah. yeah. Pisses me off.
Take that, movie critics.
Yeah. And some musical theater critics as well, though.
A lot of musical theater critics, I think. Also, they don't matter anymore, so, you know.
Wait, why not?
Because everyone's going to go see Frozen.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, they have to review something.
Yeah, that's true. Otherwise, they're out of a job. Well, newspapers are good. It's a whole dying industry on, like, 16 yeah, different exactly. fronts.
Love you, God, I loved you so. So we could fight, or we could wait, or I could die
till tomorrow. Goodbye.
That was the last 5 years, Jimmy.
That took about 5 years. Actually,
it did. Yeah. Do you think the podcast will sound the same or different if you listen to it backwards?
Actually, what you'll find
uh-huh.
is if you listen to it backwards, you get a secret recipe for a nice sweet potato pie.
I'm excited to make that sweet potato pie.
Yeah.
I got a quiz question for you. You ready?
I'm stoked.
Okay. Every actor who opened as the leading role from our next musical has won the Tony Award for Best Acting, even when the role was not actually in the musical.
What could that even mean?
It's so confusing.
Yes. Hey, if you would like to get in touch with us, please do. Come find me on Twitter at AsInHendrix or on YouTube at the same handle.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or our show Twitter is Jim and Tomic, or our website is jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion.
Yes, where you can chat up Storm and tell us, who do you side with? Do you side with Kathy? Do you side with Jim? Are you in the middle? Do you want to overshare about your personal relationships? Come and do it. Why the hell not? Everyone's doing it these days. And hey, tell your friends all about this podcast. Last 5 years is a popular one. Maybe they really love that show. Maybe you're like, hey, I know these two guys that talk about this.
You should listen to them talk about it.
Yes, you can. And we shall see you next week.
Toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Remember that one? Throwback.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.